So how in the heck can you become ballsier with your clients and your prospects? Well, today, that's going to be the topic of the Sales Playbook Podcast. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about a lot in sales is how we many times set up these extremes, like almost like these two polar opposites, these two goalposts, if you will, that represent two radically different philosophies when it comes to how we go about things. So what happens many times in sales is that you have a lot of people who lean heavily on the side of wanting to be liked. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be liked. I mean, I think deep down, don't we all want to be liked? But it becomes a problem when our need to be liked gets in the way of our need to truly serve someone. And that means like we might be holding off on asking tougher questions, having more difficult discussions, calling people out respectfully and all. So that's one of those goalposts, right? One of those like extremes to sales and the philosophies that we embrace. But the other extreme is being just an all-out dick, just being obnoxious. And I'll give you like an example. I know I don't need to like beat up the point, but many times, like have you ever known somebody who's like, you know, like, well, you know, I call it like I see it, or, you know, I'm gonna be straight up honest with you here. And first of all, what I found with like 99.9% of those types is that they're looking for a license to be a dick. And, you know, they're saying that and they're prefacing, you know, and almost asking for your permission for them to be obnoxious with you. So I see that as like the opposite. So you have the ones who want to be liked, and as a result will kind of avoid the tough conversations, the tough questions, respectfully calling someone out, setting some mutually agreeable expectations and parameters. And many times with clients, I refer to it as you really have to know what the out of bounds markers are, right? I mean, you know, are you going to take calls from them throughout the weekend? And, you know, what's the, are they going to like text message you at 2 a.m. in the morning and shit like that? So, but the opposite of that is, you know, just being obnoxious with people and not caring about their feelings and just being abrasive and irritating and annoying and all. So I actually think that there is a really good, like midpoint. And the midpoint that, like, I want to refer to it, for lack of a better term, is just being ballsier. It's not being timid, right? And it's and avoiding everything, that one extreme we talked about. It's not being in-your-face obnoxious, I call it like I see it, so now I have a license to be an asshole. It's, you know what? It's like a nice midpoint. So let's talk about how you can achieve that, all right? Now that like I've beaten the hell out of that. So the first thing is, I mean, you know, like you might want to start asking ballsier questions. There is always, just about always, right, this elephant in the room. And I'll give you an example of this. One of the elephants in the room for me, remember, guys, I sell to sales reps, but when I'm talking about some of the bigger enterprise level deals that I'm doing, I'm usually dealing with an executive vice president of sales, many times a CEO, you know, certainly VPs of sales, but it's high level sales leadership. And one of the issues that they experience with some of these sales teams is turnover. Now, an interesting thing about turnover that I want you guys to know, just to kind of set up this example, is that the average cost of turnover of a sales rep is anywhere from 150% of their annual salary to 300%. So really all you would need to be doing is turning over 10 sales reps a year to be north of $1 million a year that you're losing in turnover. So it's really part of the conversation that we have to have. Also, it's important that we have this discussion because it's not just a financial loss for a company. Many times turnover, you know, affects morale and it becomes a cancer in the organization. So many other things now start to happen because of the turnover and morale and then these issues and things between the departments. So that's one of the things that I discussed. Now, there's some people that get a little put off that, you know, Uncle Paul here has the balls to ask that question. It's a bit of an intimate question. It's kind of like I'm asking a question about their family, and I am. So what do I do in order to get away with asking a ballsier question? So this is the portion that if you're driving, I would encourage you to pull over because you're going to want to jot this down as well as some of the other ideas that I'm going to share. The first thing that I found is that when you're coming up with your questions that you're going to ask during your needs analysis for a particular appointment, to me, that is part of your pre-call planning prep. You're coming up with, like, based on your research and what you know about that company, maybe your history with them, you're coming up with some preliminary questions to get that needs analysis going. One of the things that I do is I look at what the order of the questions are going to be. I look at the order of what the questions are going to be. So if I have a question in there that's going to be a little more direct, a little more intimate, it's going to be one that represents calling attention to the elephant in the room. I found that it's best not to just like say, hey, how are you? You know, how about that damn elephant, right? Or hi, how are you? What's up with all this damn turnover you're going through, whatever? It just doesn't work. And by the way, I base that on personal experience, not just in selling, but being sold to. And I remember like having a meeting with somebody in financial services. And I'm like, not even, like we just seems like we finished shaking hands. And next thing you know, they're asking questions about my net worth and how much I'm making a year and everything else. And I kind of felt like, you know, like we had no foreplay here. Like, you know, like, what the hell, man? You know, like, it was a bit much. And it's the same thing when we're doing our needs analysis. So the first thing that I would encourage you to do is, yes, ask tougher questions, but place them after you've asked some safer questions so that you kind of, and what's good about, by the way, placing it at the right spot. What a lot of people don't realize about the needs analysis is that when you're asking good, intelligent questions, you're gaining, like you're developing rapport with people. Developing rapport isn't just about chit-chat and liking the same shit and talking about the trophy on the wall and the pictures of them on fishing trips and stuff like that. It's asking intelligent questions because I don't know about you, but when people ask me smart questions, their credibility with me like goes up tenfold. It'll be the same thing with you. So that's the first suggestion that I have for you. The other one is that you have, and I'm going to call it a softener, ready to deploy in a moment's notice. So what's a softener? A softener is something that you're going to say or do either proactively, immediately after asking the question, or again, it's ready to be deployed if somebody gets uptight over your question. So let me give you an example of what I mean by a softener. So recently, I had an appointment with somebody, and we got into the turnover question. I did exactly what I was preaching before, and I waited. I didn't, you know, wait until like the end of the appointment, but I certainly didn't do it 3 to 5 minutes in. We talked about some other stuff. We kicked around some other issues. I even prefaced it and said, okay. And the prefacing, by the way, was part of the softener. I said, You know, we've covered the easy questions. Now, with your permission, you know, I'm really going to have to ask you some tougher questions. And the person was like, shoot, I'm an open book. And I went and I was talking about turnover. Now, I didn't do it in a way that they had to get defensive and everything else. I was just asking some questions about it. The person got really, really uptight. So what I did was I used a softener after that, because the last thing I wanted was to have somebody uptight and offended and everything else. And I certainly didn't say anything offensive. It's just the question, like, it represents an unpleasant topic. But yet I want you to think about it from my perspective. If you're training organizations and you want to train somebody and you know that they desperately need you and they've experienced a high level of turnover, they're having problems with morale, their reputation in the marketplace because of the fact they can't hang on to their competitors, it's being leveraged and exploited by, you know, their competitor. It's becoming a bit of an issue. It's important stuff for you to have to talk about with them, especially if they're not doing anything about it. So it's like going to the doctor. So what I did was for those of you who have actually met me, you know that, man, I got to lose a lot of weight, man. I am one fat bastard. I mean, I'm just going to put it right out there. I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it or whatever. And when I say, I don't mean like I got to lose like 20 or 30 pounds. Seriously, I was just at the doctor like 3 days ago. And man, I got to drop like 85 pounds, like 75 to 80, like 85. I may be a little scrawny, but, you know, probably in the 70, 75 pound range. So seriously, man, it's like, it's not like one of those things that if you were sitting across from me and I said to you, I got to lose weight, you'd say, no, not you. You're in your prime, Castain. I definitely have to lose the weight. So I use that to kind of soften it. So person got a little bit put off and they're getting uptight and they're pushing back and everything. And I said, I know exactly how you feel. And the best example I can give you is, you know, I went to the doctor recently, and quite frankly, every time I go to the doctor, he's always breaking my balls about having to lose weight. And it's a conversation that I really don't want to have. It's unpleasant. You know, he's even called me out on changing the subject, which I have, and trying to, you know, make a joke of it and everything. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to this person to be my best friend. I'm going to this person so that I can embrace a healthier lifestyle. And I'd like for you to look at it the same way. I mean, you know, what we want to do is, you know, focus on the health of your sales organization. And in doing that, we might have to deal with some stuff. And hey, man, that's where, like, I kind of used my sense of humor. And I said, and again, it's not going to seem as funny to you guys, and I'm not going to quit my day job to go into comedy. And I said, and look, hey, if I could sit there and basically get a lecture about, you know, being overweight and having to, you know, lose weight and I'm going 90 miles an hour toward a heart attack and early grave and all that, come on, man, you're getting off easy talking about turnover. So I used a softener. So my advice to you would be, you know, what softeners can you use? Also, how can you, in what ways can you change the order of your questions? And then also, in what ways can you put some questions in there about things you really needed to talk about? By the way, I want to tell you that by the end of that meeting, you know, as Forrest Gump would say, we were like peas and carrots. And the person complimented me on the fact that I had the balls to ask him these difficult questions and also stay with the agenda and keep asking him difficult questions even after, you know, he was ready to lock horns with me about it. So something for you to think about. Next, I think we have to become ballsier in tightening the leash on our deals and with our prospects. I think we need to take like a little bit more control. And again, it comes back to maybe being a little bit like ballsier. So without giving away all of this, right? Like, you know, I gave you a few things to do on the last one. This one, I'm going to teach you how to fish. So the question I want you to ask yourself during some quiet time, which I'm hoping that's one of the things that you're doing. That was one of the bits of advice that I gave last week when I offered about 18 ways for you to have a stronger second half of 2018, one of the things I said was take more time to think, and thinking time. So one of the things I want you to do is take a little bit of quiet thinking time, and heck, you could even go to your sales team in addition to the quiet thinking time, and you can talk a little bit about how you guys can take a little bit more control. So the question is, in what ways can we take more control of our deals without being controlling? You see, there's a difference between taking control and being obnoxious and manipulative and controlling. Again, it's like, you remember like those two goalposts, those two polar opposites. So how can you take better control? Now, part of this, I said, yeah, I'm going to teach you how to fish. Part of it is I'm going to feed you. Maybe it goes back to that being overweight thing, right? I want everybody to eat when they hang out with Uncle Paul here. So one of the things that I teach in all of the webinars and in my coaching practice, one of the ways that we can do it is by assigning homework to our prospects and our clients to keep things moving forward. Now, when I say assign homework, what I mean is, at the end of the meeting, always start with yourself, because again, almost like when I put the humor on myself and having to lose weight and having to deal with a doctor that's telling me, hey, you know, this is like unacceptable, Castain, you fat bastard, you got to lose weight. It's again putting it on yourself, and people aren't going to get mad at you if you start with you. So what you're going to do is you're going to say something like, well, I've obviously had my homework cut out for me. One of the things you requested earlier is that I get you A, B, and C. In addition to that, I'm going to work you up some numbers on our coaching program and our on-site leadership development program or whatever, right? And maybe some other thing. And then I'm going to say, okay, fair is fair. I've got my homework. You've got your homework as well. And if you don't mind, and what I do is I put timelines, by the way. I didn't say that before when I was talking about me. Sorry about that, folks. But I put timelines on it. And when, especially when I'm talking to them about their homework, I'll say, is it reasonable to have this back to me by this date or this date? So what I'm doing is I'm getting them used to making commitments to me. To me, that's the real always be closing shit. I think people understand that always be closing thing as obnoxious like behavior, constantly coming at somebody like, want to buy, you gonna buy today, hey, you gonna buy, almost like having like a dog that keeps like trying to hump your leg. That's how I see that. So in this context, I want to do that. See, homework is also important too, because if we keep people engaged between meetings, they're thinking about us. They're also test driving what it's like to work side by side with us, but also psychologically, it places us as equals collaborating instead of me being above you as the seller or you being above me as the buyer, right? We want to be equals. That's really the best approach for us to take. So the homework way is the homework approach is a good way to go about it. Now, there's something else too along these lines. I mean, I think you also have to become like you have to hold people accountable when they don't do their homework or when they don't do something. And you have to find a way to politely call people out. Like, you know, one scenario that I hear a lot about, and when I was in my earlier days of sales, I certainly experienced this one a lot, where you have people who through, and I want you to think about this if you've ever experienced this one, where throughout the sales cycle, they're continually asking you for things, and you get it to them. If you tell them that they're going to have it on Wednesday, heck, man, they'll probably have it on Tuesday, a day early, right? Anything that you commit to, you do, but somehow those rules don't apply to them. They're supposed to get you things that you need to like be able to present them with options, and they don't do it, and you have to chase them, and they're not doing their part. I think you have to find a way to get ballsier with that. And the reason why I think you need to do that, not because we're in some kind of a bad power play thing or we're trying to be, you know, the alpha, you know, male here or whatever it is. If they're going to become your client, I think it's very, very important that we kind of set some parameters. And I want you to think about, how would you have that conversation with people? What would you say to them next time they're supposed to do something and they don't. I'm not talking about being picky here, folks. Again, becoming ballsier with people is not just some kind of a, you know, blanket okay to be obnoxious and rude with people. It just means just getting a little ballsier with them and just saying, hey, you know, I'm happy to do these things for you. But, you know, I've asked you for three things that you haven't done yet, and I'll be more than happy to do these things. But how about before I go ahead and do these other things for you, get me those three other things so that I can continue to move heaven and earth for you. But until then, you know, we're really not in a 50-50 relationship here. So, I mean, and I'll even ask people, I mean, is that fair for me to ask for you to do your part on this and have a discussion around it? And again, you don't have to do it the way I do it. Find your way of doing it. That's going to be a better way. The next thing that I believe that you have to get ballsier with is something that I refer to as PPD. PPD. PPD stands for premature pricing discussions. It's when people are asking you for the pricing on something where you haven't done like a complete analysis. You have no idea where this is going to go. And you know that in many cases, it's not just people being curious about it, it's that they're price obsessed. And it's like, to me, in sales, we love to use these crazy analogies. And it seems like we always like to talk about being a good doctor, right? So like, let me go with that for a minute. I mean, imagine going to the doctor and saying, look, in the spirit of saving your time, doc, I know exactly what I need. I'm going to need a triple bypass. What's your best price? I mean, holy shit. I mean, could you imagine that? And people say, well, that's different. That's medical. No, it's not different. Because malpractice occurs, whether it be, you know, in a medical type of context or in, you know, like in the context of your solution and your widget. How the hell do you know how you can help them? And it's not that we're ashamed of our pricing. I'm not. And I know, and I will tell you guys flat out, you don't go to me for Castain's bargain basement prices. That's not the brand that I've tried to create at all. Certainly not with my pedigree. It's just not going to work. But, you know, I'm not afraid of my pricing. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't want to avoid having that conversation with you, but damn it, I need the facts first. And, you know, sometimes we have to, and I guess this is another way that we need to be ballsier. We have to be allowed to have the proper environment to assess needs and then offer solutions, offer pricing options. And somebody hitting that discussion button prematurely hurts everyone. Very quickly, the example that I love to give for this one goes back, seriously, 31 years ago. This summer, probably right about now, it happened. When, if this were the movies, you'd see me a lot younger and thinner. They probably would be playing some good metal in the background. Definitely like Bon Jovi was being played a lot that summer. There's Uncle Paul, full head of hair, thinner, handsome mofo. And I almost said the curse there, by the way. I'm telling you, we're getting closer and closer to that F-bomb happening. And like, I don't know what the hell's going to happen then. But anyway, I remember I was very active in like decisions about like the wedding because my wife and I paid for part of the wedding. And we went, like Laura had gone to this florist with her godmother and they had some ideas that they put together and they wanted me now to be there to kind of help with the decision. So this lady starts off right away with this like vision, like she's like this real artiste. And she's talking about how all the guys are going to be wearing roses and talking about all these floral things and shit. And all I'm hearing, and I trust me, I wasn't like this with the other conversations. I'm hearing a cash register. I'm seeing dollars in this woman's eyes. And I'm like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle this. So I wasn't rude or anything. And I said, look, before we continue, I don't know if they gave you a budget or anything else, but like, can you give me an idea where we're hovering here? And what she did now, from her perspective, She thought I was having a premature pricing discussion, PPD. And in many ways, I'm sure I was. But she handled it wrong. You know how she handled that, by the way? She stuck her hand in my face. I shit you not. Stuck her hand in my face and said, she didn't even call me by my name. She said, sir, we're losing momentum. Please hold that for the end. I'm really glad that she, you know, she was a woman. Because when a guy sticks his hand in my face, I have one thought. Breaking their hand. I can't think of any good coming from some shithead putting their hand in my face. And it is one of... Don't we all have those things, like the nails on the chalkboard for us, that really sets us off, like violation of your personal space, somebody being like just a real obnoxious asshole with you, that kind of stuff. And she did, and she ticked all, you know, all of the boxes. Needless to say, she didn't get that sale. But what are you going to do when people want to talk about price at a time where it's just not the right time? What are you going to say and do? Because that represents a stock situation in sales. Meaning it comes up over and over and over again. It's not going to happen every time. And yeah, there are some things that we could do to kind of take better control so it doesn't even come up. But it's going to come up somewhere, somehow. So what is your stock answer to that stock scenario going to be? That woman didn't have one. She could have handled that a lot better than like sticking a hand in somebody's face saying, sir, we're losing momentum. Like, you know, like what the hell? So anyway, so that is my little story there when it comes to that one. But the other thing, too, that you have to become ballsier with is when you get ghosted. Right? That's just like the big term right now. Like I used to call it when prospects go silent, when prospects go MIA. Now it's like when you get ghosted. And the whole idea of like getting ghosted, it's when people like these prospects just stop getting back to you. So you might have to get a little ballsier. Not again in going to the extreme like that woman did, like sticking your hand in somebody's face. But like, what are you gonna do? What, like, what's your plan to, first of all, prevent, not that we can totally prevent, maybe a better phrase would be reduce the probability of getting ghosted. And what is your plan, should you get ghosted, to kind of draw them out? What's your plan? What kind of communication are you going to keep? And I'm going to tell you what not to do, by the way. Please. Stop with the like sending an email and then forwarding the email from your send and then sending it again to me. And I've done it, by the way. So I don't want you to think like I'm like, you know, St. Paul here. I've done it. And I think sometimes it's a good idea to send from the send thing. But I'm seeing this trend with people of continually resending the same sent thing. So it's the same shitty email over and over and over again. And what a sent, like a forwarded email from the sent file says to people, just in case you didn't know this, like if I was translating right now, I would translate this for you. Translation, hey, dumbass, like how about answering me, right? Or hey, shithead, how about an answer? So it really has that way of communicating that to people. So I would think of something a little bit better. Plus, I'm also here to tell you, that is a very typical response to people not responding to you. You don't want to be typical. Your job is to be different from the pack, to stand out. Because if you can't differentiate yourself when you're competing for the business, yeah, you sure as hell am not going to differentiate when you have the business. So my question to you is, in what ways can you get a little ballsier in terms of like reducing the probability of being ghosted? And heaven forbid you get ghosted, in kind of drawing them out. Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to like get that message across to them? And doing it in a way, like I said, that it's not the same thing. It's like, to me, folks, if I am emailing you and you are not responding, why wouldn't I pick up a phone? Why wouldn't I drop in on you? Why wouldn't I contact you through LinkedIn? Why wouldn't I send you a text message? Why wouldn't I try something creative? Why wouldn't I try something with humor? Why wouldn't I try a pattern interrupt that's like a left hook that you're not expecting? to kind of break that pattern of like stimulus response being the stimulus, me reaching out to you for an answer, response, you just blowing it off and not responding to me. You got to break the pattern. What are you going to do? Next, got to get ballsier in terms, and this one I have quite a few things, right? And we'll kind of wrap up after this. I really think you have to get ballsier in terms of not being consumed with what people think about you. In terms of, like, and more specifically, get ballsier in terms of just, like, not caring about the world liking you or disliking you. So this one comes with an explanation. Like the way I started this podcast today, it's not a license, folks, for you to be an idiot. Now we're going to the opposite extreme. We're not saying that. I'm just saying that sometimes we're so consumed with the world needing to like us that it keeps us from doing things that are going to put food on the table and enable us to serve them at a higher level. So let me give you some examples from my own mistakes that you can learn from my journey. So one of the things that I had to do was not being so consumed with, and getting a little ballsier with this, I was really concerned up until 2013 in being everyone's friend, in being everyone's, you know, kind Uncle Paul. And what happened was I ended up by giving away a lot of things because I didn't want to be disliked. I had a lot of people taking advantage of that. In fact, you know, a big influence on my journey to rebrand myself back, which actually started in 2008, by the way, when I first went online and LinkedIn and blogging and then eventually this podcast, was the book by Bob Berg called The Go-Giver. And I was like, yes, you got to give up front and unconditionally without a scorecard. And I found over time that that was not a practical approach for me. Giving in that context to the charities that I support, absolutely. But what happens sometimes when you're giving is that you attract a lot of people who want you to continue giving to them that have no intention of ever buying your products or services. So what happened was, you know, then they'd reach out and then they'd want, hey, could you jump on a call? Can I pick your brain? And I thought by being good that people would do the right thing and buy my coaching and buy my programs and everything else. And yeah, there were some people that did. But truth be told, in 2013, I almost went out of business 5 years ago. I almost went out of business because it was just hurting me too much. I really lacked the balls that I needed. So what do I mean by that? Well, you know, like I didn't have the balls in that context when somebody would reach out for help to say that, you know what, I mean, it really wouldn't be fair to my paid coaching clients, right? I mean, here they are, they're paying for my coaching program and you want free advice. And also, and I'm not saying that you say it the way I'm saying it now, this is kind of the sentiment, but also, I mean, let's be honest, folks. I mean, if you go to my website at yoursalesplaybook.com, you're going to find over 3,000 blog posts. I think now we're up to like 3,200 or something like that. 3,200 blog posts that go back 10 years because I started in 2008 in November. You're going to find over 300 audio sales lessons. Like, and this is an audio sales lesson, by the way. Been doing those since 2010, 8 years on that. You're going to find that. You're going to find all kinds of resources. So it's not like I'm this stingy bastard that's saying, no, everything we do together must be money. I'm giving like unselfishly here. And, you know, to me, then to have to give a free coaching call or whatever to somebody, it's a bit much. And none of them resulted, like hardly, I would say 95 to 98% of them didn't go anywhere, right? You're giving something free and then that's it. And a lot of people took advantage of it. So just, it was amazing by just getting a little bit ballsier and saying to people, hey, listen, you know, that's the kind of the type of conversation I reserve for my paid coaching clients. I'm attaching a link to my coaching page. Have a look at it. And if it's something that interests you, whatever it is, let's get you involved in the coaching program because I give lots of one-on-one attention with these things, both in phone calls and in email support. This might be a better fit for you. And it's amazing because, of course, like anything else in sales, I don't get 100% of those converted into clients, but I get a lot more than when I didn't have the balls to ask that question. Do you see what I'm saying? And again, we're not being rude here. We're not saying I don't care about you. We're not saying, you know, go shit in a hat because you're not paying me. And, you know, it's just a matter of having something at your fingertips that you're going to say in those scenarios because they come up. The next thing that I started doing and I started getting ballsier with, back prior to 2013, when I would have one of my courses or whatever it is, I hardly ever on my blog would advertise for it. And I felt like, oh man, I'm gonna, again, going back to that needing to be liked thing, right? And I would hardly ever advertise for it. Now, if you guys know me, you're probably laughing as I say how much I've changed with that. There, it's probably easier for you to figure out now if, like, there's ever a time when I don't advertise for one of my programs. At the end of every blog post where I've given you something, at the end of it, there is a by the way type of message. Like, by the way, if you found value in this, this is what we're going to be talking about in our sales camp program. At the end of every one of my podcasts, those of you who have been loyal listeners, don't I at the end of every one of my podcasts tell you about a program that I have? And I have no shame in doing it. Why? Because especially last week, I gave 1 hour to you guys with 18 tips. And at the end, I took 2 minutes, maybe three, to say, hey, here's a program that I have coming up. Now, will that kind of approach piss some people off? Absolutely. Do I hear from people every once in a while, like, how dare you? Yeah, but you know what? I don't want those people anyway. If they're too cheap to be able to lay down their money and they're going to get offended that I would ever, like, try to remind people that, hey, I'm not a charity. You know, I mean, like you guys, I sell shit. I'm not just, like, what do you guys think? Like, I won the lottery and I'm just, like, giving back to the universe? I mean, yeah, I love giving to people, but shit, I got to pay my bills too. So that's one of the things. I got a little bit ballsier with that. And by the way, whenever you're going to get ballsier about something, you got to look at the results. If it's resulting in, like, a lot of fist fights and a lot more arguments and stuff, yeah, maybe there's something in that approach that maybe you're leaning too far to the extreme. In this context, I looked at my results. And with that, with people asking me for free shit when I would offer the coaching program, guess what? I started selling more coaching programs. When people were, like, you know, like with my blog and stuff, in at the end of every blog post, putting some kind of basically a link or, you know, a pitch about a program that I have, I'm selling a hell of a lot more. I mean, like off the charts compared to where I was a few years ago. The other thing that I've gotten a little bit, like, not a little bit, like, I mean, like, really ballsy with, is my email subscriptions. You know, there are people, and I'm about to change the pop-up on my website, because I realized, man, I've had that there, like, forever. I want a different thing, a different, what they call a lead magnet, where you're offering something, and in exchange, people sign up for, you know, your emails and everything. So there's a lot of people who put up something, we will never spam you. I'm not doing that because my philosophy is that is not a practical approach for me to take. And here's my whole thing. If you would ask me, hey, Castain, I'm thinking about signing up for your email list. Are you ever going to spam me? My response to you would be probably along the lines of, are you effing kidding me? Of course I'm going to spam you. I'm a salesperson. Why wouldn't I spam you? You know, sometimes we get so caught up in what is like the public sentiment about how we should do things that we are taking, like, food off the table. So, and by the way, like, for probably 4 years now, my attitude has been, I'm going to send you probably 3 emails a week where my competitors send you one. I'm going to probably piss some people off. But so long as, like, I'm not losing, like, all my subscribers because, God forbid, I send you 3 things in 1 week. And, yeah, I'm going to hit you up for some of my products. And my theory is, if I'm losing subscribers, if I'm getting a shit ton of hate mail, and I'm not making money, well, then I probably need to change something. But for me, I've lost a few subscribers, nothing that I would even be alarmed at, very small percentages. I get very little, like, complaints from people. I get them, like anybody else. But I will tell you again, you know, not to sound like this pompous ass, my business has grown tremendously by becoming ballsier and just getting my message in front of people more often. Go figure, right? Also, the other thing that I do that I want to put out there is, you know, getting a little bit ballsier about LinkedIn. I see these self-appointed experts, and I see it with a lot of people who are these quote-unquote social selling experts, some of which have never sold a damn thing in their life, by the way. That was just kind of like when it came time to figure out what they're going to do, oh, I know, I'll be a social selling expert. I mean, after all, I've never sold a damn thing, right? And I love social selling, by the way. I teach it as part of kind of a mixed martial art with some of the other more traditional approaches. If you really think about a lot of what I do, a lot of what I do would probably fall under the social selling label. But a lot of them are saying you should never sell on LinkedIn. My response to that is tough shit. My response to that is tough shit. I'm playing the tough shit card on that one because that's not practical for me. I'm not there to be your buddy and to make and collect a bunch of names on my screen that I'll do nothing with. I am going to sell on LinkedIn. And I will tell you a few times a day in between all the content I put out, I'm putting up things for my sales camp program. I'm putting up things for that webinar. I'm putting up things for my coaching program. Again, I measured it. I make a lot more money now. Do I hear from people every once in a while, oh, you shouldn't sell on here? Yeah. Do I make a note to give a shit what they think? Absolutely. I don't really care what they think. The time that I care what other people think is when I'm being truly offensive. And when maybe there's a lot of people, and then you have to put your ego aside and say, hey, you know what? Maybe this wasn't a good move. I'm really hearing from a lot of people, and I seem to have like really struck a nerve. Maybe my approach wasn't the best. Maybe I need to back off of that a little bit. But what a lot of people will have you believe about LinkedIn is that you give and you put things out there and you provide value, but nobody ever tells you, well, how do you do that? Like, I don't even understand what the hell that is. I know that everybody loves to say provide value. What is that? Please explain to me what providing value is, first of all. But the theory is if you're doing all that, people will come to you. I even heard recently someone I absolutely respect. The guy's bought stuff from me, so I'm not going to publicly like bash the dude. But I heard somebody else say, yeah, the best way to do it is just to never sell and just put stuff out there and they'll come to you. Do you realize that that's a recipe for starvation? Seriously, even if you were to tell me, but Paul, I have 150,000 followers on LinkedIn, I'm still going to tell you that that is a recipe for starvation. And by the way, I'm betting that the average person listening to me right now doesn't have 150,000 followers. You guys are probably under 10,000. Heck, I have all of about 5,300 connections, probably 7,500 followers. And I do very, very well, probably better than people who have 100 or 200,000 followers. Why? Because I have the balls to ask for your business. And I see it also on LinkedIn with people who are putting up these videos. They want to be everybody's friend, and they're doing these things so that they're the cool kid and they're getting all the likes and everything. And I'm here to tell you, you can't pay your mortgage on likes. You can't pay your mortgage on all the, yeah, bro, you know, all the like great comments and everything else. And these people have no call to action in their videos. They're not putting, I mean, not even as much as like saying, hey, listen, everyone, if you like this video, sign up for my free sales tips. Or you know what? If you liked what I talked about today, we're going to be talking about this in our upcoming webinar or whatever. Seriously, instead, they're so consumed with being liked by you that they're losing an opportunity. You're right there in that moment. Why wouldn't they say, hey, you know, you want more free content? Sign up for my newsletter. Or you like this? Well I'm going to be talking about this in my premium stuff coming up. They're so hung up on that this fact that you're not supposed to do that on LinkedIn that a punk like me comes along with, you know, his 7,000 followers and like, you know, a handful of people commenting on his stuff. And then he comes along and eats their lunch. So Again, I want to be very clear in the message that I've been saying today. Nobody's saying, and therefore that is your license to be an asshole. Therefore that is your license to be obnoxious and over the top. No, that was one of the extremes we said. But think about where you are right now and that extreme that I just laid out. Couldn't there be something down the middle where you are going to sell every once in a while on LinkedIn, but you're just not going to do it every single post? That maybe, I don't know, maybe it's an 80-20 thing for you, or a 60-40, or a 90-10. But damn it, if you're sitting there waiting for everybody to do the right thing and say, you know, oh, this Uncle Paul is great, man. He gives us so much stuff. Let me support him by buying something from him. It really doesn't work that way. And that's part of the mistake I made a few years ago. So I had to get ballsier with that and just, you know, be willing to take some criticism. But yet at the end of the day, I was serving more people and my bank account was getting a little bit bigger. The last example that I'm going to give you is as far as getting ballsier. Getting ballsier with some of the other difficult conversations we have to have with people. And sometimes, like, especially with like clients or maybe a prospect, right in that moment where like you're about to close the deal, and having conversations about your payment policies and having conversations about policies and delivery fees and things like that. Sometimes we avoid those things. And again, I think if you have standard situations that come up in sales, which, you know, we all know that that's what happens, right? There are standard situations that come up where somebody may not like your payment terms. Or if you're like me and you own a small business and you're having payment conversations with people, sometimes, you know, they're going to push back and want to do it their way. So, and I'll give you a very quick example of that. All of my services are due prior to the services being rendered. I have no accounts receivable. Seriously, I have zero accounts receivable. There's a lot of reasons why I do it, and I won't bore you with that because that's not what today's podcast is all about. But I'll tell you that it's actually a standard procedure with some of the bigger training companies. As many of you know, I came from Dale Carnegie. We did that there. Any kind of on-site training, especially, you paid for it in advance. And part of the reason for doing that is that a lot of the work for on-site training especially is done in advance of the event. The event itself, compared to all the work you have to do scripting out and creating the content and the slides, all the back and forth, creating the exercises, the homework, writing a training manual, getting it printed, your expense in terms of your travel expenses and everything, that's all incurred prior to the event. So since the day I opened my doors in 2011, that has always been my policy. Now, what happens, not a lot, but it happens here and there. I've had it happen a handful of times. We've agreed, and I had this happen not too long ago, we agree that 30 days prior to the event, payment in full is due. So we had a situation where it was due, let's just say, on the 12th. And the 12th came and went. I don't wait until like the 15th or the 16th to begin that process of collection, because I just know that, especially when it comes to all the bills people have to pay, training is going to be at the bottom of the list, right? They're paying their employees. They're paying all the people yelling louder. Training is like all the way at the bottom. So what I do that day, if it's not in the mail, I am calling them up and very, very politely saying, hey, listen, I didn't receive it today. Could you tell me when it was sent? Now, this is where it gets interesting with some of the bigger companies, and I bet you guys have experienced this. Let's just say it's the 12th. It was due on the 12th. It wasn't in today's mail. I'm having the conversation with you. I've had people say to me that, yeah, listen, I'm sorry. We actually have that scheduled for payment on the 28th. And yeah, I'm saying to myself, like, okay, well, wow. I mean, first of all, in every one of my proposals, it said the due date. When we have agreed to move forward with it, it says the due date. On if there's a contract involved, it says the due date for the payment. It has everything written out nice and clear. And now let's change the rules. So what I do very, very politely is I explain to them why that payment is needed sooner than that. And then I say, listen, you know, I'd love to be able to accommodate that, but I'm very big on fairness. And I treat everyone the same. Everyone gets the same pricing, unless, of course, they're buying in, like, more volume or whatever. But everybody has the same payment terms. And, you know, we did agree on the 12th. Now you're saying the end of the month or whatever it is. And then what I say to them in a very nice way, you don't have to use my example here, but it works from my personality. Keep that in mind as you listen to this. What I say is, I say, so, you know, you're telling me now we agreed on the 12th that you're going to pay it on the 28th or whatever it is. I'm supposed to come in and train your team on, you know, the 12th or whatever. How would you feel if on the 12th you have everybody in the room and I don't show up? And everybody's waiting around, and it's a few hours later, just like as it is now, a few hours after the mail came, and you have to call me, hey, Paul, where are you? And I'm off with another group of people, or maybe I'm sunning myself at a nice beach, like nice drink in hand, smoking a cigar, and I say, yeah, you know, I was really thinking about it, and it wasn't convenient for me to train you guys today, and I have you guys scheduled instead for the 28th. And I kind of use humor with it and a little bit of sarcasm so that they realize that, look, you've just kind of broken the rules or whatever. So I'm not saying that's the best way. That's a way that works for me. But you have to come up with a way that works for you. But one thing I can tell you is that not saying something is one extreme, and that's not good. Being a total asshole about it is another extreme. That's not going to help. So you really need to find a good way. Now, all of these things that I mentioned today actually come with a little bit of a psychological tag to them. You know, it's an interesting thing about salespeople, and I bet you probably feel the same way. Maybe you don't, but I want to throw it out there. A lot of us, part of what we enjoy about being in sales is that we have a level of control. Remember, I'm not saying being controlling or a level of being manipulative or, you know, just really, you know, just like swindling people. I'm not talking about that. We enjoy a level of control, whether it be a control of our own destiny, our own paycheck, controlling the cycle and helping guide people along. We enjoy a sense of control. When we lose control of different things that we talk about today, like not asking the questions we knew we should have asked, not talking about the things that we knew needed to be talking about, not tightening the leash and this thing now delays and or, you know, they end up by ghosting us, not like, you know, taking control of the fact that people want to talk about price right now and we don't have enough information to do that. So we just tap out and comply with them. Maybe, like, you know, not having the control when it comes to being consumed with having, like, this need to be liked by everybody. What happens is that creates a sense of discomfort for us. And it's a sense of discomfort, I think, and again, I could be wrong. I'd be anxious to hear your thoughts on if you want to email me, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. I think what can happen sometimes is that, you know, we feel like something's wrong, but we can't put our finger on it. Like, you're not running around saying, I know what's bothering me. I can't control my deals. I know what's bothering me. I don't have the balls to have difficult conversations with people. Instead, it's just this sense. It's this kind of feeling in our gut that, like, you know, just something is off. I feel out of sync. So this might be something for you to think about. But I thought this was a timely conversation today because here we are. We're right into the second half of 2018. So I think this might be something that you could find your own version of it. Remember, I gave you examples from how I do things. This works for Paul Castain. We don't need a Paul Castain clone. Like, I have a difficult time, like, pulling off Paul Castain. You guys have to come up with your own that fits your personality and your style. I don't really feel that there's a right and wrong here unless you find yourself clinging too tightly to one of those extremes, one of those goalposts that we talked about. Now, before you go, the other thing, remember, I told you that I do this at the end of everything that I do. I want to remind you that we are coming up on the deadline for something. And the deadline is for our virtual sales camp program. Now, this whole thing takes place right on your computer screen. The sessions are pre-recorded, which means you go at your own pace. So it's not like you have to like be in the classroom at 1:30 p.m. and meanwhile you got stuff going on or maybe a vacation. You will go at your own pace. So if you find that after hours or in your lunch break or maybe like, you know, every day at like, you know, 9:30 p.m. is good for you, great. If you find that maybe doing one of these sessions every 2 weeks works for you, great. Go for it. But here's what we're going to cover in the program, or here's what we are covering. First of all, getting in front of more opportunities. I mean, I can't imagine that you heard me say that now and said, yeah, Castain, you lost me there. I mean, please, dude, I have more than enough opportunities. I don't want to get in front of more opportunities. Like, who the hell doesn't want more opportunities? So we're going to talk about where to hunt and specifically where a lot of your competitors are missing. I think there are places where the pack kind of runs in your industry and in every industry. And then there are places that people just miss altogether. We'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about how to mix up your prospecting efforts so that aside from phone and email, notice I didn't say a replacement for phone and email. We're going to complement the phone and email with snail mail, creative approaches, LinkedIn, things like that. And referrals, by the way. I have, as part of those sessions, 15 email templates for you, one cold calling opening statement template, and four voicemail templates. Because I know what you're thinking. You're probably saying, yeah, but I never get voicemail, Paul, right? Now, I'm being sarcastic there. I mean, being that we get voicemail quite a bit, we want to stand out a little bit. So I give you four different suggestions and the template so that you can stand apart from all those other voicemails that they're getting. But now the second part of the program, now that you've gotten in front of more opportunities, is closing those opportunities. So this program, or this part of the program, picks up from the moment you've set the appointment. So we're going to talk about things like, how do you get access to all of the stakeholders? We're even going to talk about this really cool pre-appointment kit that I suggest, like I recommend that everybody sends us before that first meeting, because it's going to help you take control of the process a little bit better when you see what's included and help you stand apart and even establish your authority, which I think is so important that people see you as an authority. We're also going to talk about, again, how to take immediate control of your meetings. We're going to not only talk about questioning skills, but like when anytime I get into questioning skills, I don't really get into that whole open-ended questions, closed probes type of shit, because like you could go on the internet and Google that right now and probably get 60 million results. And I really don't want to teach something that is like beaten to death. I take a different approach to questioning skills, and I have five questioning tactics and styles of questions that I think will come in handy. I even have a PDF that's included in this whole thing with 100 sample questions for you to like use and kind of put in your questioning arsenal. We're going to talk about what to do when things get competitive. Specifically, how can you get your competitors disqualified without getting like shady or like bad mouthing them or anything else? And we're also going to talk about reducing doubt and skepticism and objections, because that's what keeps people from moving forward. Whether you like it or not, people distrust salespeople, right? There's a big shock. What can we do to reduce that? I'm certainly going to tell you that. Now, there's also a bonus session, and it's called 25 Ways to Rock Your Sales This Summer. What I recommend if you purchase the program, I'll even put it in the email as a reminder to you, is that you start with the bonus session because it's timely. It has to do with tactics and tips and things that you could be doing right now, now that we're in summer here, to kind of leverage the summer instead of being challenged by the summer. So as I mentioned to you before, this is going to be ending this week, registration. So we've been talking about it now for probably about 3 weeks. All good things must come to an end. So you have until July 19th to sign up. My advice to you would be this. If this caught your attention, I want you to go to yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. Yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. Do it right now. pull the car over, whatever you have to do, check it out, because you know the deal, right? I mean, how many times do we have great intentions? We put something off, we get into that procrastination thing, something else comes up, life kind of like moves us down a different road, and then lo and behold, we miss the very thing that could be helping us. So I really believe, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback about this program, so I think between getting you in front of more opportunities and then helping you get them across the finish line and helping you with some summer-specific tactics, say that one 10 times fast, I believe it'll help you. So the website, again, that I want you to go to is yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. You can also email me with any questions, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.